Please join me in the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Okay, tonight our 40-minute speaker is Mario C. from Aliso Viejo.
My name is Mario. I'm an alcoholic. I want to thank Joe and his wife for asking me to speak tonight. And welcome to the newcomers. Yeah, you made it. And congratulations to the birthday guy today. That's wonderful, 4 years. It's really nice to be here tonight. It's really nice. It's really wonderful to see some good friends, too. Some really good, very good friends here tonight. From the Monday Night Men's Day. That's my home club on Monday nights up at the Friendship Center. Let's see, my sponsor is Buzz L, and my sobriety date is March 5th, 1986. And I can pretty much say I came from a normal family. I have two brothers, and my parents are still married. And I can remember my first drink. When I was about 12 years old, my parents used to have these big gourmet parties, big cooking parties, and we had a very large backyard, and I used to clean up in the morning, and I remember bumping into the keg. They had this big red like trash can device with a tap on it, and I remember pushing it, and it was on. And I said, holy smokes, there's beer coming out of here. So I grabbed one of those red cups, and I filled it up, and it was all hot. It was about 12 noon. And sure enough, you know, my thinking was is that, you know, this is what you do. And, you know, I drank it, and it tasted horrible. But I remember this is what adults do. They drink this regardless of how it tastes. And I remember drinking the entire cup, and at 12 years old, now, I wasn't very large, so, you know, it hit me pretty well. And I remember liking the feeling of what alcohol did to me right off the bat. And I can remember my whole attitude and outlook started to change, you know, as to this is something that takes me away from who I am and how I feel. And I liked it. I liked it so much that I fell in love with it. And from that point on, I can remember my disease, you know, progressively developing and getting worse, you know, from the people that I hung out with to the amount of alcohol that I preferred to drink. You know, it was just a couple of beers and it rolled into a six pack. And then, you know, by the time, you know, I stopped drinking or, you know, I had enough, I was, you know, I can remember holding on to a 12 pack saying, this is all mine. This is all mine. You know, and just hoping everybody had enough of theirs. You know, and, you know, I can really remember, you know, my disease hitting me in such a way that, you know, I woke up wanting to know when, where, and how I was going to get drunk that day. And thinking that that was normal. You know, that was normal for a kid my age. Alcohol, you know, made me believe that it was helping me get through the difficult times in my life, the transition that I had going through, you know, junior high and into high school. And for me, it did. You know, it allowed me to be drunk and not have to deal with all the issues that come to a person at that time in their life. And for me, I thought that was a normal way of living, you know, getting as drunk as I could every single chance and opportunity that I had. And I made a lot of acquaintances, you know, and I learned, you know, in my recovery the difference between acquaintances and friends. And my acquaintances appreciated that we had nothing in common other than our ability to get drunk together. And that's what we looked forward to, nothing else and nothing more. And, you know, the saying goes that misery loves company. I loved a lot of it. And I looked out and I sought those people, and I knew exactly who they were, and they wanted to do exactly what I wanted to do. I didn't realize anything else around me during my drinking. I didn't realize how my life was turning. I didn't see what I was doing to my family. Most importantly, the people that loved me the most, my mom and dad and my brothers. I could care less, because at that time in my life, it was all about me. It was just completely, wholeheartedly, just stay out of my face. You guys are getting in my way. I don't want to have anything to do with you. Just leave me alone. Everything's okay. That's how I felt, and that's just how I thought things were. Getting drunk, throwing up on myself, and passing out. And that's just, I thought that's how I was supposed to live during that this time of my life. I locked my door constantly. I yelled at my parents. They didn't know what to do with me. I wouldn't come home at night. And I didn't really care. I didn't really care, because that's, to me, was normal. That's what a normal kid was supposed to be doing, enjoying life. Enjoying life so much that I thought that if I was to die, I'd leave a good-looking corpse. And that's, you know, how I would live my life. And, you know, to me, that was sanity. You know, that was sane. And I didn't see the insanity, you know, taking control of my life every single moment from the moment I woke up, you know, when, where, and how I was going to get drunk. My grades were shot to hell. I think I was, you know, on a first name basis with my vice principal. I went to San Clemente High School. My parents didn't really know who I was anymore. You know, I was a normal kid going to soccer and going camping with my family's outings all the time. And I can look back, you know, now at all these pictures of Mazatlan and Big Sur and just all these great events that they went on. And I was never there, because I always had an excuse, you know, not to be a part of. You know, and I was so, like, angry that I wouldn't want me to be a part of that. You know, and I can see where my parents said, oh, just fine, stay. You know, do what you need to do. But, you know, it's easier. You know, it's easier not to have you in our lives. You know, because how out of control I was. I got arrested my first time when I was 16. And we were drinking over here on Boca de la Canyon. And the police officer came down without any lights. And boom, just threw them on us. And we were underage. And I was taken in for being out past curfew. And I can remember that was the very first time in my life that, you know, I ever heard my father cuss at me. You know, and I just saw, you know, the anger, the frustration, the pain he had at this person that he once knew in his life, but he didn't know anymore. And he didn't know what to do with me. And all I could remember is how much I really didn't care. What an inconvenience this was for me, to be arrested, to have to call the only person that I was allowed to call, and to be taken home. At that time, I was a short order cook for my neighbor's restaurant. And for me, it was the perfect job, because I got drunk in the morning and I sold dope at night. And, you know, that's, to me, was the perfect job for a 16-year-old kid. And, you know, it got me into a lot of trouble. In fact, it got me arrested. You know, I was out with the owner's daughter that night when I got arrested. And my dad thought it'd be a better idea if I got another job, you know, because of what it was doing to me. He thought that outside influence and making that change in my life would help me. He really didn't understand, you know, the alcoholic thinking that I had, because it didn't matter where he placed me or who I was with, I was pretty much going to end up doing exactly what I knew best, and that was to get drunk. He got me a job at a grocery store that he used to work for, and I got a job bagging groceries, and the pay was good. It was just a little bit more structured, but they were shooting for an opening. I was shooting for an opening that they had. Doing trash in the morning, which entailed cleaning up the back room. And sure enough, my alcoholic thinking was going, okay, there's a lot of alcohol in the back room, you know, and this is a good opportunity for me to, you know, just have a steady supply, because being 16, it's hard to steal a lot of alcohol from people's liquor cabinets and pimping beer. We used to buy beer over here at Catalina Liquor for, you know, $4 for a 40-ouncer, and as long as you had money, the guy would sell it to you, but it was just hard. So for me, it was easier to rob the grocery store I was working for than to buy it or steal it from other people's homes. So I worked really, really hard, and I got the promotion. And, you know, they never had a problem with the back room. It always looked diamonds. It was just clean and no problems back there. And it's because, you know, I kept it that way. And I kept it that way so that I could have, you know, all the go-backs, the wine coolers, the empty, or just the missing, you know, six-packs, one missing out, everything that was didn't have a full setup. It would be out in the bamboo bushes and for me to pick up after work. And, you know, that was a good deal for me. You know, and I had that going on for about, six, 7 months. And in that time, you know, my drinking stayed the same. Every time I drank, I always passed out, and I threw up everywhere, and my friends would always have to take me home and just drop me off. Or if I did make it home, I'd be passed out in my front lawn or in my front living room. And that's just the way I drank. I didn't know how to drink any other way. And I can remember one time my friends busting in on me because I wouldn't answer the door in the restroom, and they were worried about me. And I'm thinking, everything's all right. Everything's all right. Why he bothered me? You know, and, you know, here I am in the toilet, and my friends are worried about me. And I'm just thinking, you know, if I don't make any noise, nothing's going to happen. No one's going to even think about me. You know, I didn't think about the way I was living my life. You know, this is where I was at. You know, this is who I've become. And that was normal for me. I didn't see a problem with that. And everybody else just said, you know what, you drink way too much. You drink way too much. I didn't think so. I had an opportunity to go to this really big party one night. And for me, big parties were special because they had all the beer you can consume and you didn't have to worry about anything else because it was just free alcohol. And I just love that. And I had to work. And it was just a big deal for me to get out of work and, you know, be there that night. And I can remember going to work, you know, getting ready, thinking, how am I going to get out of work? How am I going to get out of work? And up until that time in my life, I pretty much lied to everyone. I lied to my teachers. I lied to my parents. I lied to my family. I lied to anyone that I could tell because it was just easier that way than telling the truth and being honest of where I was at, what I was doing, or how I was doing in my life. So the day that I went to work, I went up and I said to my manager that I had a death in the family. My grandmother had passed away. And they looked at me and they said, oh, Mario, just go home. Don't even worry about it. And I can remember walking out of there and just not even realizing, you know, what I'd said to my family, to my boss. You know, and just like, oh, that was easy. You know, I'm on my way. How wonderful is that? I didn't even understand, you know, the gravity of those words. I had a death in my family. You know, I can remember that night, you know, literally crawling in the gutter because I didn't have enough to drink. I didn't have enough to drink. And only if I could make it, you know, a little bit further so that I could get to the door, you know, without spinning and falling down and cracking my cup. You know, I didn't want to crack my cup. I let my head crack before my cup would crack. And just crawling and trying to make it. I remember coming to the next morning, all hungover, and waking up, and there were flowers all over my house. And I'm wondering what had happened. And it finally hit me that work had sent flowers. You know, and I said, oh, shit. And the only thing I worried about was getting fired, you know, because that sweet gig that I had at work with the alcohol, you know, just that was the worst thing that could happen. Not what I said, not what had happened, not what I did, but that I might get fired. That's my thinking, you know, that the only thing that's wrong in this entire situation is that I might lose, you know, what I have with my alcohol. That's the only thing that was wrong with the picture here. I can remember my parents looking at me just going, who are you? You know, what have you become? They had no idea what to do with me. And I can just remember, you know, just so stressed about getting fired. You know, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? I had this committee in my head just telling me, you know, get honest. And the other part saying, just why? Why even get honest? Just go down with the ship. You know, don't ever surrender. You know, just keep fighting until you're dead. And I mean, that was my attitude. That was a part of me. And I can remember going into work that morning, and, you know, I can remember my boss, Bob Bingenheimer, he would come over, and he's a big fella. And he said, "Mario, we got to talk." And I said, "That's okay." I knew that this was coming. And mentally, I really wasn't prepared for it, because I can remember going in there just nervous and scared and not really knowing what I was going to say. You know, I really didn't have a lie for this one. And, you know, I can remember looking at me and saying, "What's going on?" And all of a sudden, it just came out of my mouth. I go, "Bob, I can't stop drinking." I said, "Oh my God." In my head, I go, "I said it. I couldn't believe it. I just said it to someone. I got honest for the first time in my life." Because that's all I had. That was it. And I was done. You know, I had nothing left in the lying mill to pull out. And it was just like, okay, now what? You know, the ball's in his court now. And he sat back and he said, "Oh, you know what? You know, we can help you. You know, you're a member of retail clerks, you can go to rehab. But you have to complete the program if you want to get back your job." And to me, at that moment, you know, rehab was a big geographic. You know, get me out of the situation now. You know, and somewhere else is a lot better than here right now. You know, get me away from my family, get me away from work, and, you know, I can play the victim for a while. You know, just get the heat off school, everything. I said, "Yeah, tell me about rehab." You know, and there's my alcoholic mind working, you know, scheming, you know, easier, softer way. You know, not dealing with what I got dealing with at home, not dealing with what I got dealing with at school. Here I am, a junior, and I have credits of a freshman or sophomore, and you know, I'm just like thinking, I got to get out of this place. And I can remember going up to rehab and up in Doctor's Hospital, Lakewood, New Beginnings, and I went through detox for 3 days. And I can remember being really angry and upset that I made a really wrong decision. You know, I wanted out of here. I wanted my friends. And not so much my family, but just mostly the acquaintances that I had known, you know, and drank with. And realizing how much I was missing out. You know, that's all I thought about, how much I was missing out. All the things that were happening, all the wonderful, exciting, you know, times that I threw up on myself, or all the exciting times that I ended up in the planters or smashed my head up against the wall and woke up with blood on my face, and just, you know, because I drank too much, all those wonderful things. Those are the things I was missing, you know, because those things were important to me. I can remember a guy coming in on my third day as I was getting out of detox, and he came in with a big blue book and a real thin, light blue book. And he introduced himself. He said, "Hi, my name is Frank, and I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous." I go, "Well, what do you want? And he looked at me and he smiled, you know, as any old timer would with a newcomer. And I saw something in his smile that I really hadn't seen ever before in my life, and that was genuine serenity. He looked at me and he said, "You know, I brought you a book, and the first 164 pages are a guideline to living, you know, and these are stories, and this book's called Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, the big book, and this is your 12 and 12, and this will explain the steps, you know, that are suggested that you might want to consider, you know, in order to change your life around." And I said, "Okay, yeah." And I didn't really know what to say or what to do. And I go, "Well, do they teach you how to drink in Alcoholics Anonymous?" And he goes, "No, we don't drink one day at a time." And I said, "You don't drink at all?" And he said, something I couldn't comprehend. And, you know, he looked at me and he said, "You know, I've been clean and sober for 15 years. And I go, "You're full of it." You know, I just looked at him, "You're full. No one's been clean and sober. Why? Why would you do that?" You know? And he goes, just keep coming back. you know, I'll be here, I'll be around, you know, just keep coming back. That program introduced me to Alcoholics Anonymous. My first meetings were up in Lakewood. I can remember a big book study, a speakers meeting on Sunday night. We had dances in Atherton and Long Beach. We went to the Alano Club in Cherry Avenue. And I met my first sponsor up there. You know, in order for me to finish the program, I had to get a sponsor. In order for me to finish the program, get out, I had to work the first step, you know, with my sponsor. His name was Pat Smith. And he told me something that I still tell my sponsees today. He said, "Mario, you may need sobriety, but unless you want sobriety, it will never work for you." And I looked at him and I said, "What do you mean?" And he said, "There's a willingness that you have to have inside of you to want to stay sober, because your sobriety is the most important thing in your life. Without it, you're dead. It's more important to your family. It's more important to your children. It's more important to your job. It's more important to you than in your school or anything that you possess. Without it, you're dead." And, you know, understanding what that willingness was a very hard concept for me. And he explained it to me like this. You know, "What did you do to drink?" And it hit me. It wasn't anything I wouldn't do to drink. I'd move a mountain if I knew there was a drink on the other side. I would lie to my grandmother if I knew that I'd get a drink out of it. He said, "Take that energy and multiply it by 10. Because that's what you're going to need to stay sober one day at a time in this program." He also told me that the only way that I'll ever go back out again is if I ever forget where I came from. Coming to meetings keeps my memory green. Working with others reminds me who I am. I'm an alcoholic. He also said that, you know, you'll never be able to keep what you have unless you're willing to give it away every day. Yeah, and that's something that, you know, I do on a daily basis. Yeah, is carrying the message. Carrying the message. I never turn down an AA request. Yeah, it's just something that I do. I spent 103 days in there. A lot of cleaning house with my family. A lot of recognizing, you know, who I am and what my disease is about, and how it's always doing push-ups. My disease is doing push-ups. It's waiting for me to put me back exactly where I left off if I pick up the first drink. I went to my senior prom clean and sober. I had a 60-day chip. And I can remember having an 8-hour pass for that. And I got my income tax return, and I felt pretty grateful for the first time in my life that I was actually doing something with myself. I remember the entire evening I had a date that I didn't throw up on. You know, I had people that were proud of me, of what I was doing in my life. I was so proud of coming back and taking a urine test, knowing that I didn't drink. Just a very, very lucky opportunity for me in my life. I remember getting out of there after 103 days graduating, and the first thing I did was go to Mexico with some buddies of mine. And I can remember my alcoholic thinking, telling me that, you know, I never really had a problem in Mexico. Yeah. And, you know, I can remember, you know, telling myself, you know, I can just stay sober in the United States. You know, but what happens in Mexico stays in Mexico, right? And I can remember telling myself that. And I went down there with my buddies. I mean, these guys are true friends of mine. I've known them since I was in kindergarten. They're normies. And then they like to drink sometimes. Yeah. And, you know, I went down there surfing, and sure enough, you know, they're partying and they're drinking, and I'm just thinking, why can't I be a part of? Why can't I enjoy that again? after 103. Now, I didn't think about all the times my parents drove up three times a week from Lakewood, from San Juan, and I didn't think about all the things I had to do to get released from that place. I didn't think about my job. I didn't think about my family. I didn't think about anything. All I thought about was, why can't I pick up a drink? And then I met this girl. And she... yeah. That's exactly what I said. Yeah. And, you know, she looked at me and we met and she said, you want to do some outside issues? I said, sure, why not? You know, so after 103 days of sobriety, you know, she went looking for it and she couldn't find these outside issues. So she said, you want a beer? And in Mexico, you can't twist off a beer. You have to get a bottle opener. I said, sure, why not? I didn't have a bottle. She didn't have a bottle. She didn't have nothing. She just had a beer. So I'm holding on to this beer. And I can remember walking around with this girl with this beer in my hand. And for the grace of God, there was my friend, you know, that I've known since kindergarten. And he's a large fellow. He's about this big. He works out a lot. And he looks at me drunk. And he grabs me. He grabs me by the shirt and he lifts me up. By hand, he takes a ball and he breaks it on the ground. And he knew exactly what I went through. And then he throws me on the ground, right in the dirt in Mexico. And it's dirty in Mexico. And, you know, I can remember, you know, being on the ground. And he's looking at me and he goes, Mario, if I ever see you picking up a drink again, I'll kick your ass so bad that you'll never be able to drink again for the rest of your life. And you know what? That's when my first step hit me. That I'm powerless over alcohol. And that my life is unmanageable. Now that's exactly when it hit me. You know, this is where I'm at, in the dirt in Mexico, looking for a drink after 103 days. And you know, I was grateful. I prayed. I said, thank you. Thank you for this intervention. You know, this drunken intervention, you know, by a person who just happened to be there because you planned it. Alcoholics Anonymous has been a gift to me. You know, a gift that has given me a daily reprieve, you know, one day at a time. You know, it's given me gifts in my life that I never had thought were imaginable when I was out drinking. I have things today in my life that I only wondered about when I was drinking. Alcoholics Anonymous has introduced me to a God of my understanding today, that I have a personal relationship. And through that relationship, I have a strength that has become immeasurable in my life today. That I have a clear understanding that self-pity and fear are derived solely from my lack of faith today. You know, it's when I want to take the reins and control the people, places, and things in my life is when fear and anxiety rear their ugly head in my being. And it's when I lose all conscious contact with that relationship that I'm afraid. Yeah. And that to me is something that I can't live without today. And I am really grateful for that. It allows me to walk through my fears today. You know, and today I honestly believe there isn't anything that I can't do. And it's because of that relationship that I have with God. You know, He knows my envelope to the exact measure. He knows every single day of my life, from the moment I was born to the day I die. And everything that He has given me today up until this point is part of His plan. It's part of an education, because He knows me better than anyone. And my relationship with Him today is a whole lot different from when it was when I first got sober. The things He has given me today, I wouldn't be able to take care of or be responsible for when I first got sober. Everything has been measured. Everything has been sequential. Everything is for a reason. And I've learned that, you know, it's not up to me to question. It's up to me to appreciate. And when I get things in my life that are seemingly challenging to me today, it's God letting me know that He wants a closer relationship with me today. Nothing else. And with that, He has never failed me. Not once. Everything that I've gone through in my life, I've gone through. I'm not saying that sobriety is all peaches and cream. Some days are piss and vinegar. But the point of it is that no matter what my circumstance, I have some measure of joy in my life today because I have that relationship. And it works. It works. I would not be here tonight talking to you if it wouldn't work. I'd say, no, Betty, I can't make it tonight. Yeah. And it does work. Alcoholics Anonymous today has given me a way of living that allows me to live one day at a time, not picking up a drink. And that's working with others. You know, that is my maintenance program today, is that I work with others. You know, that tells me who I am and why I'm doing the things I'm doing. It's because I'm keeping myself sober one day at a time. You know, and I have to have that in my life, because without it, I'm left to my own devices. You know, when I stop thinking of my fellow man, I just start thinking about myself. You know, and in doing so, you know, I am taking care of myself. I'm doing that maintenance, that 10th, 11th, and 12th step in my life, you know, when I'm working with others. I can't tell you enough for the newcomers. You know, get this program now. And I guarantee you that if you do, your life will only get better. I personally guarantee it. I'm not saying your life will become easier. I'm saying that it will become better. Better, meaning that you will enjoy life more. You will appreciate life more. And for me, I have a sense of gratitude that I never had in my life. Yeah. Today, when people ask me how I'm doing, I can honestly tell them I've never had it so good. I've never had it so good. And I got that from my fourth sponsor, my sponsor that I have now. Now, I can remember when I was 18 years old, you know, I came in and, you know, I was all worried. My first wife was just pregnant and I was about to have a kid and I was getting a promotion and I had like about 2 years of sobriety. And he goes, Mario, how you doing? I go, I don't know. I don't know, Buzz. I'm kind of like just, I'm on edge right now. He looked at me and he goes, you never had it so good, Mario. I go, what are you talking about? I got bills. I got, you know, I got financial insecurity. I got a kid on the way. He goes, nah, you never had it so good. Every day's a holiday. Every meal's a banquet. And every paycheck's a fortune. You know, and it hit home. You know, it finally hit home. You know, I'm grateful for little things in life today. You know, the fact that I'm not drinking today, it's a whole lot better. You know, my worst day sober is better than my best day drinking. Hands down, bar none. You know, it's because of this program. I do have an attitude of gratitude today because I know what bad is. I know what really, really bad things are in my life. And I look around today and I work with a lot of people that don't have a program or don't have a spiritual life in their life. And it's like, God bless you. You know, I'm so lucky. I am so lucky to be a part of this, you know, to come into these rooms and know exactly that I belong. You know, no matter where I am, you know, anywhere in the world, I can walk into these rooms and my seat is saved. You know, it's something you can't get anywhere else. I have relationships now with the fellas in my men's group that I can easily call them brothers in my life today. You know, that's something I couldn't do anywhere else in my life. And I'm close with my family. I'm very close with my family. But they will never understand the alcoholic thinking that goes on in my head. Where the guys, when I need them the most, I can pick up the phone any time of day, any time of year, 24/7. They'll be right over. You know, they'll be right over. And they understand exactly what I'm going through and what I'm dealing with. And I've been saved by these guys a lot of times in sobriety. You know, I've gone through a divorce in sobriety. I've left my kid in the hospital for 5 days in intensive care. I've got custody of my kids in sobriety. You know, I've gone through a lot of things, and it's because of this program. Everything has worked out the way it's supposed to be. and I've benefited a lot. You know, I can remember going through some papers, you know, when I was changing jobs, and I had a paper I had to write in college, and it asked me, where do you think you'll be in 10 years? You know, and I had the audacity to write down that I'd have enough money for a washer and dryer. You know, and that was aiming high. Yeah, you know? And you know, I'm looking at my life today, and I was like, God, I'm so lucky. I'm so darn lucky to be where I'm at and be doing the things that I want to do, and it's because of this program. You know, it's a simple program. You know, I don't pick up a drink one day at a time, no matter what. No matter what, I can call someone today. I can call someone today, and they're going to talk me through it. Now, there have been times, you know, when I've just had fits of rage as what was going on, especially with my kids, you know. And I call up another alcoholic, and they're just laughing at me. They're laughing with me because they've been through the same thing. And I can't get that with anyone else in my life today, you know. And it's because of meetings like this. You know, I'm grateful to be here. I'm grateful to be sober. And, you know, I'm just lucky to be alive today. I'm very lucky to be alive. And, you know, it's just real simple. You know, just for today. Just for today. I don't pick up a drink, no matter what. Thank you for letting me share.